Rob Shonen.
And Maya Shone, and we're glad to be with you here Tuesday, October 23rd, for another special WBAI Fun Drive. Today we have two premiums to offer to you for an appreciation for your donation to WBAI. One is Ralph and myself, Ralph Shonen and Maya Shone, at Cooper Union at the New York 9/11 Truth Movement Conference, which was called Ready for Mainstream. My presentation was 9/11 and the repressive apparatus of the state. Ralph's presentation was 9/11 and state terror, where he amplifies on this very important subject. This is a 1.5-hour DVD for your $75 contribution. And we are continuing today to offer 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction. And this was the important presentation by Richard Gage, an architect here in Berkeley, California, and a founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There was such an overwhelming response last week that once again, we're going to have Richard back with us for a dialogue in the second half of this program. We're on for just 1 hour today between 5 and 6 on the East Coast and 2 and 3 on the West Coast. So please get to your phone right away, 212-209-2950. We're going to play excerpts from each of the premiums, beginning with our presentations at Cooper Union at the New York 9/11 Truth Movement Conference, Ready for Mainstream. And please also contact and get involved with the New York 9/11 Truth Movement. And you can reach the hotline at 212-714-7147. And I'll give that number again at the end of the show. Meanwhile, the number to take down and get on the phone is 212-209-2950. Ralph, one small point before we go to the excerpt.
Brothers and sisters, what we're describing here in the description, in the account of the relationship of 9/11 to state terror, is the ongoing and imminent plans for a major conflagration, what Bush recently called World War III. On the 23rd of October, this was set forth an actual summons to nations in the world to undertake a regional confrontation with Iran, a widening war that will embrace attacks on Syria and will be extended to Afghanistan and Pakistan. There is no ambiguity about the implications of this, brothers and sisters, and it is conjoined to plans for setting up a military form of rule in the United States, which we will detail, which our talks, in fact, delineate, and which are specific in their efforts.
Great. Now, Michael, if we can go to the excerpt, we're stringing together a small portion, mine is from the beginning of the speech, 9/11 and the repressive apparatus of the state, and Ralph is a portion from midway from his presentation on 9/11 and state terror, and I'm sure when you hear these little excerpts, you're going to want to have the DVD. It's a 1.5-hour video DVD. For your $75 contribution to WBAI, 212-209-2950.
In preparing my speech, I too, like Liz, went back to some of the early work that Ralph and I did about 9/11, 7 years ago. And in particularly to Ralph's seminal presentation, a WBAI 5-hour presentation, World Trade Center Uncensored History, and a year later, the work we did with 9/11 False Flag Operation. So I want to read to you the first couple of paragraphs from that 9/11 False Flag Operation, which was broadcast on WBAI on September 10th, 2002, because it gives you an overall context. At least it provided that for me, and I think it'll do so for you. In the immediate aftermath of the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, authorities already were sounding the alarm that a terrorist network was involved, and they specified Osama bin Laden and Islamic fundamentalists in the Al-Qaeda network. The authorities did not disclose, however, that this very network had been established by the Central Intelligence Agency and that Osama bin Laden and his associate, Gulbuddin Hekmet Yar, had received $6 billion from U.S. intelligence agencies specifically to create a terrorist network, not merely in Afghanistan, but in Pakistan and beyond, in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and the surrounding area. The authorities were quick to point the finger at a demonic figure, and I have to add that they are still doing so with the false Osama bin Laden tape that was released in Kansas City yesterday. But if we look carefully at the press at the time, that is, even in 2001, and in the time since, specifically in the year between 2001 and 2002, and still more beyond, we find that, in fact, the U.S. government, its intelligence agencies, and its spokespersons were not telling the truth. 9/11, we stated then, as we state again, is a false flag operation, an intelligence term that signifies that the blame has been placed elsewhere to conceal U.S. government authorship. But I would like to refer to an intelligence operative, one upon whom the United States relied for building specifically the terrorist network that was to bring down the Soviet Union and its support for the government of Afghanistan at the time, who was so instrumental for creating what Zbigniew Brzezinski, who had been President Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, had called the Grand Chessboard. That is the designs, the imperial designs for control of the Caspian region and even further moving in to Asia and China. This person is General Gul Hamid, in charge of the ISI, that is the Pakistani Intelligence Service. And in an interview with Arno de Borsgrave, he stated, quote, "All summer long, we've heard about America's shining surplus, that the Pentagon will not have sufficient funds to modernize for the 21st century. Presto," Gul Hamid said, "all of a sudden, the Pentagon can get what it wants without any opposition. How very convenient." What he's referring to had been disclosed, although wasn't very public, in a document that had been written in September 2000, Rebuilding America's Defenses, which was a reprise of other documents that had been written by Dick Cheney and his crew when he had been a defense secretary. But now he was on board to be vice president to George W. Bush. And the project for a new American century, a neocon group who has as its members a who's who of the ruling class of America. And they produced a document, Rebuilding America's Defenses. And in there, there was one sentence that was picked up much later. Because Rebuilding America's Defenses is a very large document that shows why America has to build, why the United States has to be the dominant military force in the world, and how the U.S. government could go about creating this incredible imperial army in the aftermath of the breakup of the Soviet Union. And it states specifically this one line, which is probably familiar to all of you, quote, "The process of transformation," referring to the military buildup, "is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing events like a new Pearl Harbor." Written September 2000, 1 year later, that new Pearl Harbor was created. Why did they want a dominant military force? It doesn't come out of the abstract. It is to put forward, to control, to have hegemony over the world's resources. And here in the United States, with the militarization of the police and the extension, as we saw later with the Northern Command, of the coincidence of the military, the Pentagon military, and the militarized police, to suppress the population here in the United States that was going, that they saw was going to have an uprising, would be opposed to their demands. Not only their demands to suppress the population around the world that would again have uprisings against U.S. designs, but also the population here that was going to be starved by the shuttling of resources from health care, from education, from all the social benefits to building this hegemonic military. Long-standing plans, these were. These are not dreams that took place in the few months. These are not dreams that only belong to a Republican Party. These are plans that have gone from one administration, be it Democratic, to another administration, be it Republican. They may wear different hats, but their goals as representatives of the bourgeois rulers are the same.
There's a very important book, in my judgment, called The Great Depression, America from 1929 to 1941, by Robert S. McElveen. The recession of 1937 and 1938 threw a terrible scare into the Congress and the White House. This was a depression that dwarfed that of 1929. 17.8% of the workforce impacted and unemployed. What did they do? From 1939 to 1940, they began to put people to work for the merchants of death. Capitalism has been dependent upon arms production as an addict needs its fix in an ever-increasing doses. It has been articulated by all its major spokespersons in 1966 and 67, at the time of our International Tribunal on U.S. War Crimes in Indochina. Jean-Paul Sartre, Lélio Basso, Bertrand Russell, many of us attempted to set forth not merely the history but the structure that requires perpetual and constant genocidal war of conquest. Woodrow Wilson, who spoke of making the world safe for democracy, but when addressing the manufacturers of the United States, his message was abundantly clear. If we do not impose our enterprise abroad, we will have no liberty at all in this country. It will be a luxury we cannot afford. Our industry is at the point where it collapses unless it finds control of the world market, because the home market is no longer sufficient. Herbert Hoover, foreign markets more important for us to ensure. In order to maintain the normal functioning of a capitalist economy, it has a greater importance than home consumption. And here is Franklin Roosevelt, president of the National Industrial Conference Board, Virgil Jordan, December 10, 1940. Whatever the outcome of the war, we have taken the road of imperialism on the economic plane as on all other planes of life. Yes, some fear this word imperialism, so well known and to some menacing. Most people prefer to mask this under the more vague expression defense of the Western Hemisphere. But we are destined by our need, by our capacity, by the exigencies of rule in our society to follow this road. We have no choice but to continue as we have during the past century with the seizure of the continent and the annexation of Cuba and the Philippines. This empire must see its possibilities throughout the hemisphere west of the Pacific. The scepter must fall into the hands of the United States. That is the abiding, compelling requirement of capitalism to wage permanent war, to subjugate whole peoples, to provide the ideological rationale for sustaining this usurpation, this rape of our resources. The category of terror is but the little ideological continuation of all pretexts for maintaining that executive committee of the bourgeoisie that commands the capitalist state. Instructively, one of its main articulators, Zbigniew Brzezinski, recently broke ranks in an interesting way. Terrorized by war on terror, three-word mantra that has undermined America, the, quote, war on terror, creating a culture of fear, the damage these words have done, a classic and self-inflicted wound greater than any wild dreams entertained by any fanatical perpetrators of attacks. To justify a war on terror, they have created a false historical narrative that they will make into a self-fulfilling prophecy, he states. You know that this man appeared before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in February. He stated, they are preparing to stage attacks, even within the United States, that will be imputed to Iran as a casus belli, as the senators did a buck and wing and a soft shoe to get out of the line of this particular unexpected declaration by, of all peoples, Zbigniew Brzezinski, author of The Grand Chessboard. Brzezinski went a little further. He said, let me cite you the memorandum of the meeting between George Bush and Tony Blair on the eve of the attack upon Iraq. The president and prime minister acknowledged that there were no unconventional weapons inside Iraq, and therefore they spoke of several ways to provoke a confrontation. They were quite sensational. He left it there. None of the senators addressed themselves to this clear warning from Brzezinski. A member of the World Socialist website said, Dr. Brzezinski, who is going to carry out this provocation? Answer, I'm saying the whole situation is getting out of hand. There are all sorts of calculations that will produce circumstances that will be very difficult to trace, unquote. Has a single member of that millionaires club called Congress responded to the words of one of their own, who is breaking ranks here? I hasten to add that Zbigniew Brzezinski, let me just take a quick moment to synopsize his role as the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, as the architect of the grand chessboard and the what he called a bear trap, setting up a terrorist apparatus to destabilize the former Soviet republics in Central Asia, funding through the Pakistani ISI the terror apparatus which was targeting various countries they wanted to dismantle and decompose. At the time of the Iranian Revolution, 78, I was in Tehran for 8 months in that period, with the Mujahideen and the Fedayeen Khalq and with Ali Asghar Hajzayed Javadi or Jombesh, which means struggle in Farsi. In the aftermath of the removal of the Shah, there was an emergent meeting in Kuwait between Zbigniew Brzezinski, the Emir of Kuwait, Asaba, King Fahd of Saudi Arabia, and Saddam. And Saddam Hussein was instructed to amputate the oil-producing province of Iran, Khuzestan, with support from the Gulf Emirate states, funding biological and chemical weapons from the United States in the bargain, counting upon the Arab minority of Khuzestan to welcome an Arab army in this Farsi-majority country. And that population, of course, was the most politicized sector of the Iranian working class, the oil workers of Avaz and Abadan, who resisted. So now Kissinger and Brzezinski said, well, we'll bleed them both white. And they had the Israelis giving arms to Khomeini and the Gulf Emirates supplying Saddam and the United States. Meanwhile, the Emir of Kuwait moves his arbitrary national frontiers 900 square kilometers north until he's sitting on the largest oil reserve of Iraq, the Ramallah oil fields. Then he buys the slant or horizontal drilling equipment from Alhambra, California, Santa Fe Drilling Corporation. $2.3 billion on its board of directors, Brent Scowcroft, National Security Advisor to Bush, Robert Mossbacher, Secretary of Commerce. Who says this isn't a gangster kleptocracy in this country? He proceeds to suck out about $14 billion of Iraqi oil. Now Saddam goes to the OPEC people and he says, well, you're doing me wrong. He says, we spend our blood and treasure to stabilize the Emirates against Shia radicalism. This is how you repay us. Brzezinski and co., now under the mantle of Bush, they send Joseph Wilson, the CIA's point man, sit down with Tariq Aziz in Saddam. Well, we'll get our fleet to the Gulf. You'll get control of the oil. We'll work it all out. April Glasby, nominal ambassador, says to Saddam, they've done you wrong. The president wants you to understand that. James Baker, just to make the point, appears before the House Appropriations Committee of Lee Hamilton, the Democrat, to get a softball question. Do we have any interest in the current conflict over the frontier and border between Iraq and Kuwait? No interest whatsoever. It's a strictly... They suckered him in. Maya has delineated what we set forth in Iraq and Kuwait. Every administration since 1964, preparing for direct seizure of Arab oil. But, said Lawrence Moshe, we need a boogeyman to have to come in and be stopped in order to sell this. 1975, brothers and sisters. 1977, PD-18, the secret document of Jimmy Carter and Mr. Brzezinski. For setting up the 100,000 persons direct strike force for seizure of Arab oil. This ruling class is divided about tactics. What Brzezinski and Scowcroft and that wing of the class are saying, we got ourselves in a real bind in Iraq right now. We have mass resistance. This is not the time. We prefer death squads, coup d'etat like the Kennedy brothers in relation to Pentagon Capital at the time of the question of which way forward in Indochina, massive U.S. military intervention or the formula of Laos, Phoenix programs and James Bond Green Berets and all that stuff with which the Kennedy brothers were obsessed, counter-revolution on the cheap. We have no basis for selecting between this group of killers, brothers and sisters. There ain't nothing out there for us. They want to buy some time.
You've been listening to Ralph Schoenman, and prior to that, me, Maya Schoen, at Cooper Union at the New York 9/11 Truth Movement Conference that was held this year, September 8th. In commemoration of the September 11th events, and the title of the conference was Ready for Mainstream. Please call 212-209-2950 with your donation to sustain WBAI and Taking Aim, which WBAI brings to you week by week. And the number to call is 212-209-2950. It's your $75 contribution to WBAI. And Ralph?
Well, Maya, what we are doing in our presentations at Cooper's Union is creating the background, the context, the historical significance of the events of September 11th. As we continually try to emphasize, brothers and sisters, September 11th is not a unique event. It is part of the continuity of hegemony of an increasingly desperate ruling class. And what we try to do is document with evidence about the continuity of imperial reach, the preparations for military rule at home, the subjugation of our people, and the constant menace of new waves of attack both at home and abroad. Just as today we have articulated in these two talks how the United States is on the cusp of saturating Iran with the massive firepower of missiles that will destroy 2,000 targets and eliminate the infrastructure of an entire society.
And, Ralph, also today in the press, military operations in Iraq cost the nation $10 billion a month. Talk about taking funds away from schools, housing, all the social benefits. $10 billion a month. To date, Congress has provided, that's Democrats and Republicans, has provided almost $500 billion, $455 billion, just for this invasion and attempted occupation of Iraq, which is met with resistance, as it must inevitably. And it is this resistance that will also come from the people in the United States that is led to the militarization of the police and the expanding militarization of the Pentagon within U.S. borders. 212-209-2950 for this important double whammy. Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen at the New York 9/11 Truth Movement Ready for Mainstream Conference.
The theme we had, by the way, brothers and sisters, was not merely ready for mainstream, but ready for Main Street. Maya and I just came back this weekend from participating in the Labor Direct Action Conference against the war that brought trade union activists and heads of trade unions from Japan, from South Africa, from Great Britain, as well as across the United States. This is about the fight back, and these two speeches are laying the groundwork for a fight back at the point of production. Because the retiring military chief, brothers and sisters, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Peter Pace, stated on October 4th that the United States would not tolerate people opposing the war by vote or by voice. He made these statements before President Bush, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, hundreds of high-ranking Pentagon and military officials. We lay these events out before you in these two talks, brothers and sisters. We ask you to support Free Speech Radio. We ask you to call for these DVD premiums. We ask you to arm yourselves with the necessary ammunition and armed information, the information that allows us to prepare our people for the struggles ahead, and struggles they will be, brothers and sisters.
212-209-2950. In August, tax data that had been analyzed based upon the Internal Revenue Service collection of statistics and tax revenue year showed there is a widening gap between rich and poor in the United States. The broad majority of those paying taxes in the United States in 2005 just barely made ends meet, something that of which we're all aware. 91 million American taxpayers, that's more than two-thirds of us filing taxes, reported making $50,000 a year or less. And just recently, the San Francisco Chronicle came out reporting a study that was done by a Center on Budget Priorities that showed that in the Bay Area alone, you need more than $77,000 to survive. That's $25,000 less people are reporting, the bulk of people filing taxes reported. 48 million taxpayers, that's more than one in three, reported making less than $20,000 a year. And 25 million taxpayers, that's one in five, reported making under $10,000. So this is exactly what we're talking about in these speeches, the inevitable sacrifice of what each and every one of us earns and the benefits that we need in terms of social benefits, the lives that support and encourage our existence. This money goes towards the imperial reach. 212-209-2950. Vote with your dollars. Support WBAI. It is this station that is imperative to keep on the air to reach you. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Our speeches lay out the statement by retired Vice Admiral John Scott Redd of the National Counterterrorism Center that al-Qaeda is on the verge of attacking the United States again. On August 27th, he detailed a supposed plot to attack across the United States. This is a supposed al-Qaeda terror attacks, brothers and sisters. That is the context for the National Security Declaration of May 23, 2007, NSPD 51 by Bush, that calls for the executive to have total control in a catastrophic emergency over all forms of rule in the United States, federal, state, local, territorial, tribal, and private sector.
Michael, we can hear you too. 212-209-2950 in the background. You hear Michael G. Haskins. He's trying to reach Richard Gage, who we're going to bring on the air soon to discuss. It is important work, so important that we're presenting it to you here on WBAI 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction. And this is an incredible two-hour DVD, also available for your contribution of $75 as our thank you gift to you for contributing and keeping WBAI alive and on the air. Richard Gage, AIA architect of over 20 years of experience as an architect, founder of Architects and Engineers for Truth, this important presentation at the University of Manitoba, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction. We're going to play a few minutes from the presentation where he explains what a controlled the signature of a controlled demolition and how it related to World Trade Center Building 7. And the DVD covers so much, the symmetrical collapse of WTC 7, the effect of explosions and fire. He addresses the FEMA report, what a free fall is and what causes a free fall, and what are squib explosions, molten metal, how there is foreknowledge of the collapse. But also in part two, he goes into in great detail the discussion of the World Trade Center Twin Towers, the history of the towers, how they were built, how they were built to withstand airplanes hitting them, not just one, but a couple of airplanes hitting. What, again, is the explosive squibs? What is the symmetrical collapse? What happens with molten iron, the dust clouds that you see coming out of the World Trade Center? What could have caused that? The NIST report, that is the federal report, the deceptions, and the expert corroboration of why the collapse of these buildings was caused by a controlled demolition. Great. Hi. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Hello, Maya. Doing great. Thanks. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Richard. We with you again.
We've been describing some of the summary of the DVD, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction. We've also played excerpts from our presentation at Cooper Union. Richard was also one of the participants at Cooper Union, gave an incredible presentation, and that's how we found out and got a chance to hear his report and then consequently meet you and the beginning of a long friendship.
Yes. I want to emphasize here, brothers and sisters, that what Richard has done is to provide you with the concrete, specific, scientific evidence, the basis for arming you for discussion, argument, and presentation with regard to the physical evidence concerning the collapse of the towers. This is not a matter of speculation. This is a matter of demonstration. This DVD shows you, right in front of your eyes, the processes through which the trade centers were brought down, how it was done, and there the evidence is overwhelming.
So today you've heard two short, very short excerpts from presentations made by Ralph and me at Cooper Union, and now we're going to play, again, a short excerpt. Last week we played much longer excerpts from Richard's presentation at the University of Manitoba, and then we'll be back to have another discussion with Richard Gage. So meanwhile, get on the phones, 212-209-2950. There was an outpouring of support last week. Let's keep the momentum up. 212-209-2950. Michael?
Buildings are destroyed by a number of different forces, each having very different identifiable characteristics. For instance, fires affect buildings differently than controlled demolition and explosions. Fires, by their nature, tend to creep from place to place as they run out of fuel and find fresh fuel sources, leaving behind the burned-out area to cool. Now, when collapses do occur, and they have never in a high-rise office building, but, for instance, in wood buildings, they begin gradually and asymmetrically with large, visible, slow deformations. So remember this. Controlled demolition we'll be taking a very close look at. When buildings topple, as in earthquakes like this, their mass tends to hold together. They don't pulverize to concrete. when buildings pancake, like this concrete building in an earthquake in Mexico, you tend to see a whole lot of pancakes on the bottom. We'll be looking for those pancakes when we get to the World Trade Center. And when buildings explode, we see flashes of light, visible streamers, lots and lots of explosive smoke and from the and dust from pulverized concrete. These buildings fell over or collapsed. They tend to hang together. They don't pulverize to dust. They follow the path of least resistance. They don't fall straight down through themselves and turn to dust. Note the thick, dense, billowing, and enormous clouds with explosions. The shooting streamers, flashes of light. We'll be looking for these elements in all three World Trade Center high-rise collapses. This one on the lower right looks just like the Twin Towers, but it is not. It is an acknowledged explosion. We'll be comparing it to the Twin Towers. Let's focus on controlled demolition first. We have hundreds of examples of controlled demolition from all across the country from which to make our comparison to Building 7, because it's the most commonly used method to bring high-rise buildings down or demolish them. This is what a high-rise looks like when it's being demolished. Controlled demolitions can be engineered in many different ways. Normally, the purpose of a controlled demolition is to remove a structure while avoiding damage to adjacent structures and to do so economically. Typically, a tall building is demolished by placing thousands of cutter charges adjacent to columns and beams throughout the building and then detonating them in precise order, starting with the interior structure and then progressing outward and upward, synchronistically timed floor by floor. Destroying the interior columns allows the unsupported weight to pull the exterior inward, and destroying the building from the ground up allows the weight of the building to be harnessed to do much of the destruction. The result is an implosion, producing a vertical collapse at free fall speed into a consolidated rubble pile, which is broken up and ready for loading and shipment. This is what we see in all three of the World Trade Center high-rise buildings, and we'll take a close look. Now, this is a feat that only a handful of companies in the world can accomplish. And we're told that fire accomplished exactly this for the first time ever on 9/11. So what are the typical features of these of controlled demolitions? Well, we have direct evidence of explosives.
You've been listening to Richard Gage, AIA architect, an architect for over 20 years and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. His presentation at the University of Manitoba recently, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, the Architecture of Destruction. An impressive and incredible two-hour DVD presentation with diagrams and video and as well his amazing articulation of the issues. Two-hour DVD for yours for a donation of $75 to WBAI, 212-209-2950. And also the presentation made by Ralph Schoenman and myself at the Cooper Union event, New York 9/11 Truth Movement Conference, Ready for Mainstream, that took place recently, September 8, 2007. Richard, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you very much, Maya. It's just great to be here.
Richard, what was so impressive and so important about the talks that you've given and the DVD that's been made from these talks is that the evidence, the scientific evidence, the visual evidence, the sound evidence is in front of people's eyes. It's not a matter of speculation or inference. It is massive and manifest. And I'd like you to, if you would, give a synopsis here of how the presentation that you have provided us gives people the physical evidence of controlled demolition and by its very manifestation refutes the official fiction regarding the collapse of the towers.
Yes, well, right where you left off with that DVD, I was anxiously awaiting because what we talk about is all of the about 10 classic characteristics of a typical controlled demolition, and it turns out that we have every one of them in the World Trade Center Building 7. And most people don't know about Building 7 because the media didn't tell them about it. But it was not hit by an airplane. It was a 47-story skyscraper, easily the highest building in 33 of our states. And yet not one mention of this, what, the third worst structural failure in modern history in the 9/11 Commission report. Why? Let's take a look. We have a rapid onset of the collapse at the base of the building with sounds and sights of explosions, flashes and sounds of explosions, huge pyroclastic dust clouds racing down the road, the canyons of New York City at 35 miles an hour. Incredible heat producing these cauliflower-like forms of the clouds. That's one. Now, fire doesn't produce any of these 10 characteristics. In fact, it can't produce all of them. It can't even account for any one of them. But controlled demolition easily accounts for every one of them. What are the others? A symmetrical, smooth collapse at virtually free fall speed through the path of what was greatest resistance, that is to say, all of those vertical columns which were designed to resist any kind of collapse. And this is, but so how do you do that? How do you get a building to go straight down through its path of greatest resistance? You have to remove the columns all at once, all the way around the building, beginning with the first floor, synchronistically timed, floor by floor, and a fraction of a second earlier, the interior columns, which pulls the outside of the building in so you don't do any damage to the surrounding buildings. They were trying to save the neighboring post office. So what are the other characteristics? Well, you have squibs or mistimed explosions at the upper seven floors of this building. They went off at the wrong time. You see them right in the video on our website, ae911truth.org. That's www.ae911truth.org. Stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. You see the flash video on the upper right corner on the 40th through the 47th floor, squibs or explosions, poof, 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 synchronistically timed again, floor by floor. There's no fire engulfing this building, and yet down it goes, all at once, symmetrically into its own footprint. You also have these massive volume of expanding dust clouds, as I mentioned, and a first in controlled demolition. If you tons of molten metal found in the basement of this building, as well as the Twin Towers. Where did this come from? Well, first of all, NIST, the agency responsible for accounting for this, denies that it even exists, and yet there's plenty of video evidence, eyewitnesses. It's overwhelming evidence of this molten metal. Well, if you were going to try to bring down a building like this and blame it on fire, you would use something more silent than you would standard charges like RDX or C4. So this is perhaps why they chose to use thermate. Now, how do we know it's thermate? Well, the byproduct of thermate is molten iron. It produces molten iron, and all of the metal that Dr. Jones has been sent, he's found, this is Stephen Jones, formerly of Brigham Young University, a physicist. He found the chemical evidence of thermate, including sulfur, manganese, fluorine. Fluorine's the oxidizer in this. So it's direct evidence of arson by thermate in the World Trade Center 7.
Richard, I'd like to remind everyone, 212-209-2950. I just looked on the WBAI website, and these DVDs are not up yet, so this is your own calling. 212-209-2950 is your only way to have these two important presentations, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, your $75 contribution, and Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen at Cooper Union, New York 9/11 Truth Movement Conference, also $75. Together, $150, you're on your way for to have many hours of listening and analysis and step-by-step documentation. And again, 212-209-2950. We're only on for until 6 o'clock, so please get on the phone now, 212-209-2950. We have really tried to bring you blockbuster presentations, and I think we came through with our promise, 212-209-2950. I'd also like to remind you that on October 30th, that's next Tuesday, Ralph and I and Frank Morales, the wonderful Frank Morales from New York, with whom you're all familiar, will be speaking in Berkeley at the Unitarian Church on Bonita Street from 7 to 10 p.m. We want to see you there if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. That's Tuesday, October 30th. Meanwhile, I hear the phones ringing. We'll go back to Richard. Again, 212-209-2950. You must call.
Richard, in the extraordinary presentation that this DVD encapsulates, you made an astonishing reference to the human bone fragments that have been passed great distances from the World Trade Center, notably on top of the Deutsche Building. Would you address yourself to that for a moment?
Yeah, you bet. One would expect that if, according to the official story, which you call fiction, very apt description, the 20-story building of the North Tower is falling down through itself, the rest of the building, it would be due to fire weakening the steel, according to the story. You would expect that the people, the contents of the building, and the floors themselves would all be trapped, and cascading down. It turns out that the 80,000 tons of structural steel columns that are resisting that would immediately have arrested it. But however, given the official story, you'd expect all that to be down at the bottom of the building, and that's not what you find. There's not one of these 208 floors that are 208 foot by 208 foot floors that are 1 acre in size and filled with 4-inch and 5-inch thick concrete. Not one of them do you find down at the bottom of the building. They have been systematically blown up, and which has been hurling these 20-ton beams 500 feet laterally at 45 miles an hour, impaling themselves in buildings. That's not all. The concrete is completely pulverized to dust in these twin towers and gravel. And you also have these bone fragments, for instance, as you've mentioned, 700 of them found on the top of the Deutsche Bank building. They're only a half inch in size. How did they get there? Across the street, and 700 of them, and that's just on the top of the Deutsche Bank building. Where did the rest of them go? They found them even outside of Ground Zero. Body parts, 20,000 pieces they found, 6,000 small enough to fit into a test tube. One person blown to over 200 pieces. Those are the recognizable pieces. It's unbelievable the degree of destruction here. These beams were dismembered from each other at perfect 30-foot lengths, ready for loading on trucks and shipping, which were recycled in China, sent 800 truckloads a day as the fire protection engineers are screaming due to the evidence, which is being scrubbed from the site at a breakneck pace. Unbelievable set of affairs. The first responders and the iron workers found the ends of these beams dripping with molten metal. There's plenty of photographs of those. In fact, FEMA found by a chemical analysis that the ends of these beams were had rapid oxidation and sulfidation and intergranular melting, capable of turning a solid steel girder with half-inch thickness to razor-thin sharpness and gaping holes a silver dollar in size. And these are there's plenty of documentation of this. So thank you, FEMA, for providing this. What did NIST do? who took over the investigation. Did they bring this evidence forth into their report? No, it's completely buried. There's no mention of this rapid oxidation, sulfidation, intergranular melting. Guess what? Fire does not melt steel. We're talking about office fires, 12 to 1400 degrees. And NIST claims 1800 degrees, but steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2700 degrees. What could have produced this incredible heat and all of this melting? Guess what? It wasn't jet fuel. Jet fuel doesn't burn any hotter than other hydrocarbons. So it's not a factor in this temperature difference. So it could only have been, and it has been proven to be, thermate. A high-tech form of thermite with added sulfur. And Dr. Jones found the chemical evidence of sulfur along with the other classic telltale signatures in the right proportion of the slag at the end of the beams that proves that it indeed was thermite. Guess what? He found it in the dust as well. He's been sent different samples of dust. In all of them, he finds these little microspherules of previously molten iron. Well, how did they get perfectly round? They're up to the size of a BB, some of them. And they if you set thousands of charges throughout this building, you would, and then a fraction of a second later, say you had these massive explosions which hurled all this debris outside the footprint of the building, you would have then cooling molten iron, the byproduct of thermate, into these spheres. The surface tension brings it to a sphere, just like raindrops do, are perfectly spherical, virtually. So, these also have the chemical evidence in them of thermate.
Again, before you speak, Ralph, 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Richard, I wanted to emphasize here, as you extraordinarily present, we're talking here about hydrocarbon fires that are arising from jet fuel that are both relatively brief in duration and entirely localized, entirely incapable of accounting for the collapse and molten iron arising from the structure. You have here two fundamental issues that are manifest by the evidence that you have provided. One is that the official story violates the laws of physics and is simply incompatible with evidence and with logic. And second, that the evidence as to what did occur is manifest through the visual presentation of how the towers collapsed and the chemical evidence of thermite and thermate, which cannot be accounted for by jet fuel.
That's right. And 200 architects and engineers are demanding, as a result of all of that, a real investigation by Congress with unimpeachable investigation with subpoena power. And we're going to have 1,000 architects and engineers by 9/11/2008. That's a promise. We are working very hard to wake up the building professional community, and everyone should email our website link to every architect and engineer they know, just simply saying, check it out. Does this make sense to you? This is very important if it's true. I mean, a simple little message like that.
And in the last moments, let's say that WBAI, New York, and the other Pacifica stations are very important in this process because it's on these stations that we hear Richard Gage, Ralph Schoenman, Maya Schoen, and many other people who are on the forefront of investigation and analysis. 212-209-2950. Please call with your donation, your contribution to listener-sponsored Free Speech Radio. 9/11 Blueprint the Truth, the Architecture of Destruction, $75 contribution, and also Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen at Cooper Union's New York 9/11 Truth Movement event, also $75, that DVD.
And without Free Speech Radio, I would never have been made aware of this. I was driving down the road listening to KPFA in Berkeley. Thank God for Free Speech Radio. I tell you, I wasn't a member, but when I heard about this 16 months ago, I became a member right away, and I was a Republican. Think of the changes I had to go through in my head.
This is extraordinary, and I want to emphasize what Richard is explaining to us, brothers and sisters, is that it is the evidence, it is the information, it is the knowledge that sets us free. And that cannot be accomplished, and we cannot gain access to information of this kind without a free source for its distribution. That's what free speech radio represents. The kind of investigation that we require, that we all desire, whether it's provided by the Millionaires Club called Congress, or which is, in my judgment, not a very great likelihood, but the demand for a full and complete and unmitigated investigation, which we are all engaged in articulating, that investigation is in process through the DVD that you will be possessing. There's where the evidence is being marshaled. When we assemble those who are capable of conducting an honest and independent investigation from whatever quarter, this is the kind of information and documentation that will be central to it. Make it your own. Participate in the process. It's not a spectator sport. As we are fond of saying, brothers and sisters, we are seeking to arm you politically, intellectually, with the means through which this struggle can be conducted. Call 212-209-2950.
And I want to remind you again of the few websites, ae911truth.org, also the ny911truth.org, that's the New York 9/11 Truth Movement, who have the hotline, 212-714-7147, and also takingaimradio.com, where you can listen to this program as well as all our past programs over the past 6 years on our program archive. I want to thank Michael G. Haskins, our engineer here, Kathy Davis, who assists us each and every with every recording, and Michael Yoshida in the KPFA studio, and Mark Bilk, our webmaster, and most of all here today, Richard Gage, for taking time from work to be with you and us here at WBAI for this important fund drive. Remember, 212-209-2950. And most of all, we want to thank each and every one of you who have contributed towards Taking AIM and also the other WBAI programs. You make it happen. 9/11, Blueprint for Truth, The Architecture of Destruction, $75 contribution. Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen at Cooper Union at the New York 9/11 Truth Movement Conference, Ready for Mainstream. Our presentations, 9/11 and the Repressive Apparatus of the State, and 9/11 and State Terror, $75 contribution. We won't be with you next week. There's another program for the fund drive, but we will be with you the week after.
Thank you again, Richard. And brothers and sisters, make this DVD your own.
Thank you, Ralph.